You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Drew and Jonathan Scott here to tell you that American Family Insurance wants to protect the things that make you, you. So whether you listen to music on a vinyl record player or prefer to riff on your electric guitar, design your own renter's policy with the American Family Insurance Renter's Tool today. Get a quote or find an agent at amfam.com. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly.
American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello and welcome to the end of season Blue Room. Now, this is a little bit of a one-off special on the end of the last day of the Premier League season, which we're fortunate enough to be sat here talking about Everton surviving and still being a Premier League side. And a few other things happened in the afternoon of the Premier League, if you have basically not been on the planet Earth, that you might not have found out about. But we're still sitting here with a bit of a smile, lads, aren't we? We've got Les and Dan with us tonight. It's sort of, I don't know, I mean, when me and Les were talking about what this is going to be about, this podcast, we'll obviously do the real sort of end of season and sort of season reviews and all that, as painful as they'll be for the most part. And also look ahead to what's going to be happening in the summer and what Everton needs to do and all that sort of thing. So this is possibly a little bit of a light version of that. But I do sort of want to start with what happened today. And it turns out, gents, and I'll come to you first, Dan, to talk about this, that given what happened with Leeds and Burnley, it turns out we actually didn't need to win on Thursday night. Goodison and Burnley would have went down anyway, given that Leeds grabbed the last second win at Brentford. And our friends across, I don't know where it's from, Burnley, Mordor, whatever it is, decided to lose 2-1 and they've been relegated. So, I don't know, mate, just give us a general view of your thoughts, emotions, what it's been like. As I feel like I've been in the twilight zone for the past few days since Thursday night and everything that's happened since up to this point.
I think it's been I was thinking about this about an hour ago, that even though it's been one of the most sort of horrifically tormentative, we've actually had some of the most incredible moments.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Newcastle last minute winner, you know, beating Chelsea, beating United, and then Thursday night, some of the most incredible euphoric occasions I've ever experienced, you know, and the last 6 weeks with the fans and the general push to kind of galvanize and sort of form a cohesive sort of force of good. Despite all the negative connotations that had to happen for it to happen, leave you with a strange feeling of, I mean, incredible relief, obviously, but at the same time, you know, Matt said it on this podcast a million times that we're, you know, and he said it for years, how boring we are as a club, because we don't challenge, we don't flirt with relegation. We're just the sine wave. We're just the mediocre sine wave with a flat C, you know, and this season we've actually had that fear, that jeopardy, that genuine skin of the teeth, you know, kind of thing. And as gut-wrenching, as sickening as it's been at points, I mean, I was saying to Les, I was watching Dylan Moran, the comedian, in theatre the night of the Burnley game. And of course, you have to turn your phones off and everything. And I turned it back on at the interval, and we'd come from 1-0 down to be 2-1 up at half-time. And I breathed this sigh of relief and thought, okay, that's us 7 points clear of Burnley if we can hang on to this. And I came out after that gig and turned my phone back on. And I just stood in the middle of the street with my mouth just aghast, like,
yeah,
shit, this, we're in this now. This is it. This is sort of the moment we were all dreading. And they obviously then gained this incredible momentum. And all of a sudden, we just found ourselves being dragged further and further into it. And despite all the ups and downs and all the sort of roller coaster that we've been on, we have also experienced these incredible moments of, as I say, euphoria and joy. Yeah. And it's such a difficult season to process because of that. We all know things were wrong. We all knew things went badly wrong. We all know things were heading towards an abyss. And even today, you know, we've been absolutely slaughtered. But to be able to sort of go into that game with a feeling of not a disregard of what happened, but just a general, it doesn't matter. Mm. And we've had games at the end of the season that don't matter before, but they don't matter. In the past, they didn't matter because it just meant 12th or 11th.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. And this one didn't matter because we were finally away from the fear. You know, we were away from the nerve-jangling terror of relegation. And I said it after Brentford beat us the other day. I said, you know, you can see them losing to Leeds. I just, like, the way things are written in the stars, you just could see something happening there. But I think it's just been such a difficult one to process. And all I've felt for the last sort of week and a half is just up, down, up, down, up, down. And Thursday just felt, you know, it took me a whole day to process Thursday. I couldn't, you know, I think like most of us, couldn't sleep Thursday. My head was just completely frazzled. And, you know, I sat in here, you know, listening to it and watching it on a dodgy stream and trying to sort of keep up with everything via Twitter and social media. And when that goal went in, it felt like a combination of incredible, you know, relief and joy. But at the same time, it felt like a strange numbness had hit me, this thing where it's almost like it's over, it's done. You can kind of, your heart rate can slow now, you know, it can, you know, you can kind of step away from just constantly every day doing that thing that we've all done, which is just the connotations. If Burnley get a draw, unless, you know, and da da da, and Leeds do this and Brentford do that and they do this and we do that, and they, you know, it just felt like such a relief on Thursday just to let that all go. There was no more goal difference. There was no more what if they beat who and who if they beat when.
Yeah.
It was just, we're safe. And today definitely felt like a team that were almost like that thing where the air's gone out of them. The legs have fallen off and it, you know, it almost felt inevitable in a way, because Arsenal had to do what they had to do. And, you know, they were still kind of in that thing where they had to do this and had to put in a performance for, you know, for the end of the season and stuff. But yeah, it's just been a very, very fraught and emotionally draining, you know, at least this year's just been awful for the sheer sort of, one minute it's in your hands, next minute it's not. One minute it is, next minute it's not. And, you know, I never ever want to hear it's in your own hands ever again. ever again.
just quickly on today, there's something quite comfortably reassuring about getting battered by Arsenal away, isn't it? It's like, yeah, this is the Everton we know now. This is normal service resumed after the euphoria the other night. Just quickly pick up on that Burnley game. I was just checking the results there, and we got 9 points, maybe 10 out of 12 games up to Burnley, and then we got 14 out of the next 8. So I think, and I think we definitely changed the way we played after Burnley, didn't we? I think that focused everybody's mind on the task at hand, and you kind of look at that. I think, like you said just then, Dan, we kind of needed to hit that bottom to pick ourselves up and find a way to win, because
yeah.
before that, we lost at Newcastle. We beat Leeds comfortably. Then we lost to Southampton City. But the games were just like coming as like defeats after defeats and then punctuated by a little win. But after Burnley, we win, draw, lose at Anfield, obviously, win, win, draw. Then there was the Brentford game, then we beat Palace. And it was like the team, it definitely looked to focus people's minds off the pitch as well. Because that's when like the fans thought, we're going to have to do something about this. I was quite sceptical when it first went. I was about the, the coach getting cheered in and that. But it was made because I just thought there might be so many people who just think, nah, it's not us that. But the way it took off and the way everyone embraced it, and there was no sneering, or if there was sneering from anyone, we didn't care. This is a big important thing for me. Now, I think we've got to sort of find our own identity, and I think we kind of have done through all this. And just like we say, we don't care what the Redshirts say. We really shouldn't care what they say. They've got their own things to do. They're a super club now. I'll be amazed if we ever reach those heights ever, because it's a bit of a shock now. So we need to just make our own identity. I think, do you know what, just going for Europe every season, winning the odd cup would be lovely. Let's not try and run before we can walk again. And don't be trying to think, let's get the Champions League. I'd sooner do the Europa Conference for a couple of seasons. One season would be brilliant. That's my sort of takeaway from these last 8 weeks. And they have given me some of the best memories following Everton of my entire life. Being at Palace with the kids, being at Leicester away with Joe, and just seeing them reacting to stuff the way they did and actually enjoying watching Everton and getting something positive out of it. It's been the best thing in the world for me. And I'm sure there's loads and loads of people who are like that, who've gone with family and mates or watched it or whatever. And there's finally some positives to draw from it. Now, I know there's still going to be a lot of negatives because there's still a lot of problems within the club. And we pretty much saw that today because I think everyone probably thought as soon as they saw the team, we're probably in for a bit of a hiding today. I didn't watch all the game because I was a bit preoccupied with Man City, to be honest. It did feel like that was, pretty much reverting to type. And that's the one thing we can't do. We need to get that out of our system, though.
I think two of the points you both made are really poignant when I think about it. When I consider what Dan was saying there about the sort of the ups and downs and the roller coaster of a ride that it was, I think it'll come out in the wash, the sort of the statistically how the season come about for us. But I don't actually think there was at any point we never had it in our own hands to stay up, which is quite remarkable when you think of it. Even when we went 5 points adrift, we still had two games in hand to get out of the bottom three. I don't know if psychologically that played any hands, and obviously we wouldn't be privy to that, what goes on the inside, the way the players talk to each other and things like that. But I think what Dan said there was such proficient the way in which things came to pass, the way each and every person that supports our football club would have their own feeling and own take of how they went about the last 10 games, for instance, when we got to when we got to 30 games in the season and we were, a few points clear and everyone's like, this could happen, this. I mean, I don't know how each of you feel on how many times you've sat there and thought, we're going this year. We're definitely going. I mean, I've thought about it many times. Problem I've had is I'll speak out openly of how I feel at any particular moment. So the amount of times when you've said to people, I think we're definitely going down, we're not staying up. Look at how poor we're playing here. How would you expect us to get a result, even if we had a home against Chelsea, even against United, given how poor their season was? The point that sticks in my head a little bit more was what you mentioned there, Matt, about that word identity, which I think's been something that certainly on the Blue Room and many other fans have discussed for years with our football club, the identity of it, the way in which it's been ran. I'd probably go far as when Moyes first come in and the People's Club term come about and sort of what that meant to individuals. And for many, it becomes so sentimental. For me personally, it becomes sentimental, too sentimental, to the point where several years ago, probably around the time when Moshiri came in, and I was sort of struggling with, do we really want to be called the People's Club? Do we really want to be called? And I know that sounds really silly, given the fact that it's a positive thing and it's about community and it's about some great things that Everton do aside from the football pitch. But in terms of what's on the pitch and what we see and the People's Club feeling about it, every single thing to me, and I remember writing a piece about this that a lot of people read several years ago, was the general obsession with Liverpool, not just by fans, their fans, our fans, but by the club itself. And everything we did always seemed to be a nod towards Liverpool. And it used to infuriate me to the point where I'd be on Twitter every single day arguing with Blues, Reds, whatever, saying that this obsession that Everton seemed to have with Liverpool, to the point where the Goodison logo on the back of the Park End was put there because it was intended that nobody could see Liverpool's new stand. I mean, things were getting really, really pathetic, in my opinion. And the obsession with that club becomes so toxic that it made things a real negative towards us. Because I think people from outside of both clubs would probably look at them both and say, you know what, why don't Everton want to be more like Liverpool? Why don't Everton do more to try and get to what Liverpool do? Now, whilst most people who've listened to this right now would sit there shaking their head saying, I don't want any of that. Much the same way you said, Les, that a lot of fans wouldn't want us walking the coaching and thinking that, oh, that's cop-out behaviour. I hate that term, first and foremost, anyway. But, you know, I become twixt in between those two things, as in, you know, no, I don't want Everton Football Club to be anything like Liverpool, but take that to one side, which is difficult to do, I admit, and take to one side that it's hard to watch a team being successful, especially the one that you hate the most. The fact of the matter is, a lot of what they've done is successful, and there are a lot of things they've done that are good in the sport, in the game of football, that I would not be ashamed of Everton for doing. And I'm talking about things that to the nth degree, as in the way in which the recruitment is, the way in which they've signed players, the way in which, you know, when Moshiri first came, you remember the day you were so excited that we finally had some money to spend and things like that. In the traditional Everton-only way, it's only then when we become ridiculous at how poor we were at spending that money, to which we're still paying the price right now. I might still continue to pay the price beyond this season, given the way things are. There's such a tremendous irony in the way Everton have been, what you've wanted Everton to be and what Everton are to this day. And it's fascinating. It's almost like I've always called it the Truman Show, but it feels like that every single day that you live your life as an Everton fan. Feels like somebody has got a camera just filming how you feel, what you're doing with your daily activity because of the way in which Everton reflect upon your life. And it's so it gets so heavy, and it's difficult at times. It is mentally difficult. I mean, people laugh and joke, and one of the great things that the club does with the community stuff is mental health and everything that they're trying to do with the with all the different things they're trying to do with the in the community. And it's as much as we laugh and joke and say, you know, oh, they wreck my head, them and all that sort of thing. The fact we care that much about our club, when they get into a negative position, in which they have done this season, I don't know about either of you guys, and feel free if you wouldn't want to speak about it openly, but mentally, they've got behind me many, many times. They've got in behind my brain and probably made me feel absolutely dreadful because they are such an important part of our lives. Refers to what you said there, Les, about taking your lads to the game. And they're getting a chance, an opportunity where they've enjoyed it, they've embraced it. But there is definitely a dark side to that when Everton aren't good, particularly when, going back to what I said about about Liverpool, when they're doing well and we're doing so bad, it makes it even more difficult. It's putting it smack in the middle of your eyes and your face, particularly your lads who are in school, will have a load of Reds around them. For us, as grown men here, who are talking on this, you know, you can turn your head away from it a little bit if you want to. I'm certainly that obsessed about the sport and given what I do for a living. You can't help but always know. It's always in your face. And it is difficult to take sometimes, a lot of the time.
I think one of the problems we've got, and it's quite understandable, if we were in any other city in the country apart from Manchester, say, we'd be the most successful club by a stretch with everything we've won. Yeah. So to like to have our club on its arse the way it's been, that's bad enough. But when your neighbours and your rivals and the team you hate the most are probably the best team in Europe, possibly the world, because they are up there. We can't make any bones about it. No, they are a fantastic football team and have consistently won stuff, even when they've been like at relatively the worst, they've consistently won stuff. And that becomes really hard to take. And it goes both ways as well. So if you look at the reaction from them this week, because we have actually had something positive go for us and we've all had a good time, and the reaction from them, they can't give us a single thing. They can't let us enjoy anything without having a go. And it does cut both ways that, you know, they'll say they're not arsed about us. We showed in the week they are very, very arsed about us. Even when we're this bad, they are arsed about us. But I think now we just need to forget about them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like they are in the same breath as Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich. Pick your Super Cup. They are in that bracket now. We probably will never get there. So let's just not dwell on them. Let's just, like, think about ourselves for once and think about how we can make this as positive as possible. Because I never thought I'd see this at our club. I never thought I would see that togetherness. And I think I've said on another show, I think that's massively testament to Frank Lampard. That's like,
yeah,
he has turned it round and got everybody on the same page. We need to take that and harness it and use it. Now, I know not every game is going to be like it has been the end of this season, come next season. You know, if we're mid-table again, there's not going to be that sort of atmosphere in the ground, because you naturally can't get that up for a game when there's nothing to play for. But, you know, if you're at the top of the league or if you're at the bottom of the league, that's when you can get up for those games, because there is something to play for.
Yeah. It's a relief to know we've got that.
Oh, yeah, I know that. I mean, that's been the best thing about it, because, I didn't think we had that in us, but it's been absolutely brilliant. And just a final thing on that for me. People have been saying a lot in the week after the Palace game, God, imagine if we won something. I will tell you now, the feeling after the Palace game, even if you won the league or the FA Cup or the Champions League, it wouldn't be the same as that. Nothing will replicate that feeling. Even if we're in that position again, I don't think anything will replicate that feeling. Because if you look at the difference between 94 and 98, last day survival ones, the atmosphere was completely different in the two of them. This one was different again. And that mixture of absolute elation from being in the depths of despair at half-time and just the relief, you'll never feel that again. I just don't think we will. Even if we become dead good and win loads of stuff, it's a totally different feeling. So we just need to forget what everyone else is saying and just forget today's results and just carry on enjoying that feeling and thinking, right, we want to get this back. We want this feeling all the time, or as close as we can to get it. And I think, you know, provided we have a decent summer and everything sort of falls our way in that sense, this is something we can take forward and be positive with, which is very un-Everton-like. But we need to turn that around. Yeah.
I mean, that's been the weird thing, hasn't it? In the last 72 hours, no, more than that. You know, there's been this, as you said, Les, there's been this sort of thing. The minute that final whistle went on Thursday, you know, whether it was a betting account or Simon Jordan, you know, or some journo, you know, with an allegiance, you could see this almost instantaneous outpouring of genuine upset that we weren't going down.
Yeah.
You know, this feeling of, well, hang on a minute, we all wanted them to go down and they haven't. And, you know, so it started off with everybody deciding to basically make a mockery of Frank Lampard's tenure.
Yeah.
You know, Duncan Alexander saying, I'd like to congratulate Rafa for getting 49% of Everton's points this season. You know, Simon Jordan saying, you know, we're praising the man for keeping the club in 16th. You know, yeah. various other journalists kind of sticking their oar in, making points that, you know, he kept Derby at 6th, he kept Chelsea at 4th, and he's kept us at 16th. And there was this general feeling the next day of a lot of people kicking us, giving us a good shoo-in for being happy, for being relieved, for celebrating staying in a league, for being a club that had unified behind a manager for the first time in years, for being a club that had a manager that looks like he genuinely gives a shit and cares, and
for being
happy that we've got a group of players that 80% have let us down. We know that, and they know that, but that somehow he's managed to get performances out of players we thought were dead and buried. He's managed to get an extra 10% out of players we didn't think had that 10%. And we've got over the line with a game to spare. And all of a sudden, 24 hours later on the Friday, we were being told as a collective, you're not allowed to be happy. You're not allowed to be relieved.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to be anything other than ashamed with the fact that you're a big club. When, oh, by the way, they've been telling us we aren't a big club for years. And now apparently we're a big club that are acting like a small-time tin pot club. We get criticised for pitch invasions. We get criticised for blue smoke. We get criticised for this. We get criticised for that. And all of a sudden on that Friday, it was like the masks had slipped all over. The masks were falling off of so many people's faces. And it was like, I sat there and I think I said it to you, Les, in a text. I said, like, if this is what we become from now on, which is the sort of Atletico Madrid of the Premier League in a way that everybody hates us. You look at all the fans that have gathered behind this momentous sort of one visioned desire for us to drop, whether it's Newcastle fans, Burnley fans, Leeds fans, whoever, they're all there going, can't wait for them to go, can't wait for them to go. Tin pot clubs, blah, 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 Fat Frank, Tory Frank, blah, 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 blah. If now what we become is a team that are more galvanised behind our manager becomes more vocal, because that's one of the brilliant things about Frank Lampard since he's come here, is how vocal he is, how much he stands up for the club and how much he's unafraid to be vocal. He's a man who has been one of the world's greatest midfield players. And he is a man with an opinion that he isn't going to suppress to allow people to have a nice, pleasant soundbite. You know, he's just like, I'm not happy. That's a penalty. Anywhere else, that's a penalty. You don't get them here. You know, and then the FA are like, well, you can't say that. But the facts prove that they've given away no penalties this year at Anfield. So he was right. You don't get them there. You know, the facts prove him right. So, but I think if we become one of those teams now that just stands behind that as a power for good and just says, right, we've got a manager that's going to protect us. We've got a manager that's going to speak out for us. All we need now is a few more players that run harder, try harder, and put more in. If we can get players that turn their careers around, like Alex Iwobi, and we can get players that run and care and put their bodies on the line, then I'm happy for us to become one of those teams. I'm happy for us to become a team that are just one of those teams that everybody else wants to go, everybody else wants to lose. And we're just not going to let them have the pleasure of that. You know what I mean? We're just going to be one of those teams that say, well, okay, you don't like us, but it doesn't matter. We're just, you know, the anti-football stuff that was thrown against us, against Liverpool, the sort of, oh, this is negative. This is that. Oh, look, Frank's learned all his lessons from Jose by parking the bus. Okay. Well, some teams have to win like that. It's if you can hold on for 88 minutes and counterattack and beat a team 1-0 on the break, what's the problem? What is the problem?
Well, do you know what, Dan? Such an excellent point you've made there. You know, the only thing you need to tell them to do is have a look at what Wolves and Villa nearly did today at Etihad and Anfield. When you look at the statistics where it's like, you know, they've had 20% possession and three shots on goal. Yeah, nearly won the rival side of the league across the M62. But hold that thought about Lampard, because Les, I'll ask you about this first, and I want to get Dan's thoughts on this too. In some of the excellent points you made there about Lampard. Now, obviously Twitter's a cesspit of things at the best of times anyway. But it makes me laugh quite a bit when I see people who you follow, who've got like journalistic respect, people who you like to listen or read, the certain things they do, the certain newspapers they do, and very much people who are our colleagues, like Paddy and Greg at The Athletic, all that really good stuff they do. And it does make me smile when I think Dan said the perfect way of talking about this is the mask does slip. And Jonathan Liu, I don't know if you've seen his point today when he said, and it wasn't only him, it might have been Rory Smith as well, who I have to wait with Rory Smith at times at the BBC. Really nice guy. And it turns out what he was saying was a joke towards colleague of his, Chris Sutton. But in the point that they both said was, oh, I think it's remarkable. This is very tongue-in-cheek. It's remarkable that Frank Lampard has taken Everton from 16th place to 16th place. And the thing that got me about that was, first of all, it's pure ignorance, because had they known or looked or even probably paid any attention to the way Everton have been previous to Lampard coming, to what he has done since then. And the reply that I gave to Rory was that you look at, yes, okay, we may well have only finished in the same place that we were in when he came in, but I think the entire bubble that we found that's been so unique for us to actually get somewhere, get some results and get us to a position where we've, you know, clawed our way out of relegation has been predominantly what Frank Lampard has done on his own. And I'm not talking about anything regarding tactics, because some of that's dodgy. Some of it you look at and you think, what are you doing, Frank? What's your idea there, mate? So many times I've watched it and thought, this could go down. I think when I tweeted the other day, in the Brentford game, I think it was, why are you putting John Joe Kenny on? And I can't remember who it was he took off, put John Joe Kenny on. I'm like, why has he done that? And yes, okay, he's got his own sort of ideas in his mind of what he wants to do as a football manager. But the thing that I'm going to talk about that I think has really saved us more than anything else has been exactly what you've both spoken about, and that is getting every single fan, man, woman, child together to have a belief in something that they want from this football club to do. Of course, the great irony in all that is it's taken us to nearly get relegated for us all to hold each other's hands and want to walk in the right direction, the same direction. But nonetheless, that's something this club hasn't had for a very, very, very long time. And I'm going back to when, for instance, I don't know, in my, I'm 34, so I'm thinking back to when Ken Wright took over. Mid-90s, there seemed to be such a diversion between football fans. It was people looking in different directions, not happy with the way it was run, hatred towards Bill Kenwright, some of them supporting Bill Kenwright to the day. That still seems to be the case. But the thing that Lampard's come in and done is something that nobody else has done since those days started, since there was the controversy over the way the club was ran. Ken Wright all the way through, all the way up until when Moshiri come in and decides to start spending money. Even when that happens, there's so much of a divide between the fans that what he's doing with the money, who he's spending it on, what managers are coming in, who's the director of football, you know, Steve Walsh to brands, all of that stuff. You could actually write a novel over this in regards to how appalling this football club has been ran. Yet there's so many different directions each person could point to. And I was having a debate with a guy on Twitter about this earlier when he's saying to me, oh, the entire problem that's made Everton go to almost the brink of relegation has been recruitment. So I'm like, well, no, it's not recruitment. Look who the person is who controls recruitment. The person who's brought the other guy in, who spends the money, who chooses who to buy, who chooses the recruitment. There are so many different directions you can point each of your fingers in for what is the problem at Everton Football Club. But the one thing that Frank Lampard has done, and I repeat, is actually bringing some togetherness to Goodison Park. You look at the reaction on Thursday, which was very much a catalyst in its own desire of what we needed to do against Palace after going 2-0 down, which, yes, you could sit there and talk about his tactics up to that point. They're the things that he needs to grow and develop, and that's why summer will be so important for him, you know, on a personal level, in terms of getting what he does as a football manager into the right place to become a Premier League football manager. There's some good things that he does, but the one thing that he's got in his locker all the time now is a very, very special kind of thing, and that is getting everybody behind him. And why that was so difficult, without sounding like I'm really sentimental, is you think about the state those players were in, the state that some of them are still in that state, in terms of, I don't want them anywhere near representing my football club at times. how poor they've been, how many times they've let us down. And I'm not just talking about this season. I'm not just talking about under Benitez. I'm talking about to the point where Moyes left. I think if we started that, say if you started at that point, say 2013, 2014, Martinez come in, we had a great season, and then things started to fall apart because nobody was really asked. And as simple and as crude as that sounds, I feel as if I could probably put the entirety of Everton Football Club, its staff and players, under that term of not asked at the football club for so long. And it's the one thing that Lampard's brought in and changed, picked it up and decided to give it a massive kick up the arse. And that to me is why I wouldn't say excited is the right term, given we're sitting here discussing this at the end of the season where we very nearly did get relegated. But it's something that I'm intrigued by much more than anything else I've had in recent times at the club, that he's actually able to get the thing that is needed for players at our club to actually give a shit, to actually want to try and achieve something. And yes, okay, yes, it'll take a while. We've still got a hell of a lot of work to do. Obviously, we've got the financial situation with that as well. But I'll tell you something, I'd rather be stood on the same side as Frank Lampard than any of the other predecessors he's had. When you think of the managers that we've gone through, when you think of the Allardyces, to the Koemans, to everyone else that sat on the dugout at Goodison, he's somebody I'm willing to put my faith into because he's actually got something that is real and touchable, and it's actually something that you can see happen and develop. Not the usual words, not the usual paraphrases that people use, the way football should work and all that stuff and tactics. It's actually something that you can hear, you can see, you can touch, you can watch him doing what he does. And where I saw that most in the last couple of days was that fantastic video of when he gets Seamus Coleman, him and Mina get Seamus on his feet in the dressing room. He gets him to his toes and says, "This man is one of the best men I've ever met in my life." I'm only paraphrasing here, of course. The way in which he did that, the way in which everybody was sat there listening to the man speak, shows to me that I'm not immediately going to the case of me saying about Everton players, "Oh, he's a shithouse, he doesn't care, he shouldn't be anywhere near our football club." Yes, there are a lot that I still don't want at the football club because they've let us down, particularly given the money we've spent. But it seems we have somebody who, even if it goes to the very lowest part of what this football club is essentially there for, he was able to get something that made it into something that we can actually get behind, something we can support, something that we all want to talk about, something we can even smile at and, dare to say it, win a game of football. That's what happened under Frank Lampard. And that is why I'm more than willing to get behind somebody like that than another chancer that comes in who, I don't know, wins the first 5, 6, 7 games like Benitez did and make our season look half decent, but it fell apart because the players just mentally from one side of it, physically, and the talent that they have just wasn't capable of doing it. I'd much sooner have that in the Frank Lampard than to try and go for the next big time name like we did with Koeman when we got in from Southampton. Stick with this fella and I think we'll be okay.
It was a huge gamble, wasn't it, when he came?
Because,
you know, he's a young manager. He did all right at Derby, but probably should have done better. He did all right at Chelsea, but again, probably should have done better. No affinity to the club whatsoever. And he's still learning. So to throw a young manager like that into a relegation scrap, it is a big gamble. And it's one the club wouldn't have taken if we hadn't kicked off about Vitor Pereira. And, you know, had they brought him in, nobody would have got behind him because we didn't want him. And I think there's a lot. I don't like the idea of football fans getting involved in transfers, you know, in dictating who the club buys or who the club doesn't buy, or, you know, managers.
Kylian Mbappe does.
Well, yeah, exactly. just a side note there. Is that the most crazy deal you've ever heard in your life?
I know.
You get to say pretty much everything at the club. Anyway, But yeah, you know, it's not really the fans' place to get involved, because we've all got opinions on players, and we all think players are shit and they turn out to be good. We all think players are good, they turn out to be shit. It's not our job to do that. People more qualified can do that. But in the instance with Benitez and Pereira, although I was willing to give Benitez the benefit of the doubt, and I massively gave him the benefit of the doubt, it all turned out to be what the majority of people were saying. This will end in dismal, dismal failure. And it did. And the fact that the club didn't listen to us over Benitez, but then did listen to us over Pereira, that's just a massive relief to all of us, because we probably will be relegated now, I think. Because, you know, he's not a coach who pulled up any trees anywhere he's been. He wouldn't have had the togetherness of the fans, and that's what's dragged us over the line. But yeah, just back to Lampard, massive gamble to bring him in. And it just, like, if we split the results again between pre-Burnley and post-Burnley, that's a manager learning about a squad on the job in the midst of a relegation battle. Burnley, something clicked then, and he's like, we can't carry on doing this. And we basically shut up shop and just defended for our lives. So that shows that Lampard's not a manager, or this season, when it's mattered, he hasn't been a manager who was going to get bogged down by a style of play, or I want to do it this way. I think Jamie Carragher did a big analysis on it, didn't he? Saying he's narrowed the pitch and he sort of played to the team's strengths rather than what he thinks the team should be playing like. And that's a massive thing. You know, we got bogged down and dragged down by Martinez and his stubbornness to not just play to the team's strengths, but play to what he perceived great football looked like. It was boring as fuck. That was honestly, apart from that first season and the European run in the second season, some of that football under Martinez was some of the most boring football I have ever seen. And that's not what gets Everton fans going.
I think if we, you know, if we want to kind of keep the positive train careering down the track, I think if you look at what he's done, Lampard himself as a manager, so he's done the Championship thing, missed out on the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. He's then got the dream appointment, as it were, and gone to the club where he's an absolute icon, a legend. And he's then had to deal with a sort of transfer embargo, now benefiting from, whether it is on the pitch or through sales like Tammy Abraham and stuff like that. And now he's come to a club in freefall, not only on the pitch, but off the pitch. You know, this is a club that were one win in 14, and not only physically, but mentally. And he's managed to, as Les said, he's managed to adapt what he wants to do is not what we're doing right now. That's not what he wants to do, but he's adapted it. Yes, he's had to have a couple of pretty horrible results for that to hit home. And he still makes mistakes, as we saw against Brentford. You know, you just take Gomez off at halftime and you cling on for dear life. You know, a half fit Allen, a half fit Tom Davies is worth two of Andre Gomez all day long. It doesn't matter. You know, Tom Davies running around with a plant pot on his foot is better than Andre Gomez, right? So, but he didn't do that. And he should have done that, but he didn't. And then against Watford, he should just go for it. Just get the win and go for it. They were there. We've seen it every game after. All you have to do is apply a bit of pressure and they crumble. But he didn't. So he's learning. But the positives are that every one of these stages in his career, he's learning all the time. And this last few months, he would have learned what players he wants and what players he wants out the door. Because you can't have people like him and Ashley Cole in a dressing room and them not know what type of character they want in that dressing room with them. And if there's two men in that dressing room that know what a winning character or a character they're prepared to stand shoulder to shoulder looks like, it's Frank Lampard and Ashley Cole. And they will know, out of all those players that finished that season today, they will know the ones that they will say, right, I can rely on you. You might not be the most technically gifted footballer in the world. You might not have the best engine in the world. But when I ask you to do something, you'll do it for me and you'll do it to your absolute best. You can go. And when it comes to recruitment, that famous, you know, the golden phrase of football, recruitment, I'm quite positive that they will now recruit people that will fit into a character style and trait that he wants, that he knows he can hang his coat on and say, right, they may not be the glamour signing, they may not be the £45 million whatever, they may not be this, but this player, I know them and they will run through a brick wall for me. And we've all revered players like Lee Carsley. We've all revered players that we know leave everything out there. And they may not have been the best player we've ever seen, but we love them because of what they give.
Yeah.
And I'm relatively positive that with people like Leighton Baines, Ashley Cole, Paul Clement, Frank Lampard, all in that backroom staff, they're the kind of football people that know those type of characters. And they won't be conned anymore by these sort of flash in the pan Rolls Royce players that we have been absolutely littered with for 5 years. Mm-hmm. These players that turn up and give us six good games. And because we're so starved of half decent footballers, we fall in love with them and we raise them onto a pedestal and we say, oh, look at them. We've signed Morgan Schneiderlin. He's amazing. And, you know, the guy gave us six good games. And then be asked. And then, but I look at them as football people and I look at what they've done to the squad and I look at the players they've relied on, especially in the last few weeks. He's relied on players that we may have also looked at and gone, why is he picking him again? Why is he picking Iwobi again? He's just moving him around the pitch. And he's obviously gone, well, I'm picking him because he's an athlete, but he does what I ask him to do. And he does what I ask him to do to 100% of his ability every single game, regardless. And he's fit, and he's never injured, and he's this, and he's that, and he's that. And I look forward to the summer of seeing, the clear out we can muster. Hopefully it's quite large. And then I look forward to seeing the sort of talent that they bring in, because I think it will be younger, more progressive, and more moldable talent, the kind of talent that Frank Lampard can, you know, shape in his own image. Yeah. You know, yeah. And I think that's another thing about Frank Lampard. I think we will be able, with him and the new guys, you know, Farewell and stuff like that, I think we will be, for the first summer in a while, we won't be looking at the kind of star names we've been linked with for years. It will be more Championship, French League, European, up-and-coming talent, rather than what we've been doing for years, which is sort of pining for the big name. And I think that's actually a real positive. I think that's a really positive way to go. There's a long road ahead, but I think what we've seen in the last few weeks, just through the sheer togetherness of what he's managed to do, I think is an incredible positive to end the season on, despite the result today. I think it is a real positive. Great. And we just have to see how many we can keep hold of in the summer as far as the big names that will probably have to be sacrificed to balance the books, probably. But that's for, you know, that's for the club to decide. You know, and you know, but I think the future, despite what's happened in the last 38 games, I think if we all just sort of look at what we've all done as fans, as a collective in the last 6 to 8 weeks, I think it's incredibly positive. Because I think it's a blue, you know, pardon the pun, but it is a blueprint.
It is
a blueprint for where we want to go. You know what I mean? It's what we want to do, isn't it?
Greg did that piece in the week, didn't he? Sort of an inside Finch Farm kind of thing. And he said, like, that Thelwell and Lampard, they're always talking to each other. They seem to get on. They're both on the same page. And that in itself is more than we've had since Mashiri's been in. Because every manager and sporting director don't even seem to have been talking to each other. So that's a good start anyway. I've just got up a list of players that are out of contract in the next 2 years. So, El Ghazi, keep. Or get rid of.
Gone. I think we dropped them off at Villa Park on the way down to Arsenal.
I think so. It seems though, John Joe Kenny, out of contract this summer. Kenny, Delph, Tosin, Begovic, Longoren, Sigurdsson. I mean, no one would be upset if we didn't keep any of them.
I think Begovic has signed another deal, wasn't he?
Oh, sorry, yeah, Begovic has signed another deal. So, yeah, but, you know, he's a decent standard, but I think we saw today. I'm not sure how many goals were particularly his fault, but I watched the first half and it's just not the same as having Pickford in.
No.
You can just see the difference in levels between the two keepers. Next year, so, yeah, maybe I think the only one I'd really consider is possibly Jonjo Kenny, because he can fill in at right back and left back. He's not the best, but he can fill in both positions. And he might be happy to just sit on the bench and be that squad player. You just don't know. So, for me, that's probably the only one.
But what about, Les, the one question I wanted to ask you both before we sort of start thinking of wrapping this up was, who do you think is going to leave that you don't want to leave? Now, there was one at the top of that list that I think is the inevitable name, and that's Richarlison. And what happens there? The other one you mentioned then, I don't think many people have discussed at all. But I could definitely see teams having a look at him, seriously having a look at him and paying for him. And the surprising name, most people probably thought I was going to say Dominic Calvert-Lewin. That's a slightly different issue to me personally. The one I was thinking of is Jordan Pickford. Because I'm looking, and I tend to do this quite a bit, given the circles in which football happens with the internationals. I remember saying just over a year ago, when he had that appalling season during Ancelotti's first season of its entirety, the one when he was 18 months in, basically. And I remember saying that his last saloon for us is because he absolutely needs to play out of his socks to get in the England squad for last summer's Euros. And it's not often that I'm proved right, but I was, because he was exceptional, and he has been from the start of last season to the end of this. So that's two seasons long, but I think he's been outstanding. You can count on one hand the amount of times when he's either made a mistake, an error or something, you look at and you think, this lad's got to go. Take that back to 2 years before that, and a lot of fans are saying he didn't want him at the football club any longer. He deserves an immense load of credit for how well he's changed his career like that. Not only at Everton, because I'm pretty sure if you ask the lads, a lot of the times that he's been with us since, 2016, he'll have happily said he'd have moved away from Everton. But now I'm looking at him thinking, there are some top clubs across the Premier League, not only across the Premier League, across Europe, who'd look at that lad and think, that's a top-class goalkeeper that I'd like to have at my football club. And it would not surprise me if we see clubs coming in for him. And what, we paid £30 million for that lad 5 years ago. He's worth a hell of a lot more money than that right now. So there's a big decision to make, given as well our financial decision, the way the club's going with FFP and all the nonsense alongside that. There are going to be some big decisions to make. I'd be devastated to see him leave, as much as I would, more so with Richarlison. Do you guys, either of you guys, think you could see Richarlison leaving?
For me, yeah, because it's probably about time. You know, he's given us...
Tell me what you mean by about time.
Well, the fact that he's been with us for 4 years now, is it? Will next season be his fifth season?
Fifth, yeah.
And that's a long time for a young player of his quality to be in a bit of a shit side. So I just think from that perspective alone, he's probably given us longer than I would have expected.
Does it feel... It feels to me... It's funny you say that. It feels to me like the Lukaku era. As in, we had him for a similar amount of time, and then another club at the top level of Champions League sides were looking to buy him, ended up going to United, and obviously everything that's happened since then, the season round back with Chelsea. There's a similarity in Richarlison in that way, not in regards to his goal scoring ability. I say ability, I think that's harsh. He does so many other different things that I think it's a hassle to how many goals he scores for us. Could he score as many goals as Lukaku has done? Yes, he could. He's got the skill to do that. It's just the fact he does so many other things. They seem to hamper how good he actually is at scoring the amount of goals you'd like to see from that man. But that's why I think clubs across the globe will be looking at him thinking, if I get this fella in my side, he's just going to score goals for fun. I don't need him playing out on the left-hand side. I don't need him dropping from being a second striker. I want this fella to score goals for me. And we all know he's that good enough that he could actually do that. But yeah, I agree with it. Ultimately, everything else you said there, Les, it feels to me that you're keeping a lad from going and winning trophies, and Everton are nowhere near in that position right now.
Not that
I'd happily ever let him go.
He's also he's the first player to score more than 10 goals in consecutive seasons, like since Lukaku, and then the first player since Lukaku. Yeah. I don't know who that was. So, you know, his goal scoring has gone under the radar, and I think he's probably done that in the last 7 or 8 weeks, hasn't he? He's really picked his tally up. Big decisions this summer, though, because him and Pickford contracts end in 2024. So it's kind of like this summer is sell or extend the contract.
Well, so you're going to get the most for them right now, aren't you?
So something got to give one way or another there.
I think when we're all paranoid about DCL, but yeah. I think there'll be a lot of clubs looking at his injury record this season and being a bit wary of that. I think.
But Danny's also the one you'd probably, the one that you wouldn't care about to lose as much as the other two.
I think you could sacrifice him easier. I think you could sacrifice him easier. But I think Richarlison would stay if it was down to him, because I just think he's that kind of a guy and a player, and I just think he'd stay here as long as he could if we were better and winning stuff. I think he'd be over the moon. But I think you're right with Pickford, but I also think if you look at the teams above in that top bracket at the top of the league, who really needs a goalkeeper right now?
Well, certainly not the top two.
And well, not even, I wouldn't even say Chelsea need one, really. And
not with Mendy.
You know, so, and then, I mean, Europe, you don't really know, that's a sort of law unto its own, but I think Richarlison could be the one. But then again, you know, again, trying to stay on the positive vibes. Yeah. We've got a player in Lewis Dobbin who plays wide of a three. Now, I'm not saying he's Premier League ready or Richarlison quality or anything like that, but there is a almost sort of round peg, round hole, ready-made youth academy talent sitting there that plays wide of a three. Now, of course, if we get the money we all hope we would for Richarlison, then there are plenty of players out there that we could go and get to replace him anyway. But I think we will have to lose one, maybe two, to allow us to rebuild, because the rebuild is so big. The rebuild is so, it's right through the middle of the team, isn't it? It's two players in every position that we need to kind of, we need to look, you know, we need two centre-backs straight off the bat, really. And, you know, we could do with a really decent combative midfield player. We could do with a creative midfield player. We could do with someone who plays wide right. We could do with someone to bolster our attacking options. So we need six players minimum. So if it means that we have to lose Pickford and Richarlison to do so, but I think you're right. I think DCL is the one you would be less heartbroken right now. If someone came in with a £50 million bid for him right now, you'd say, okay, well that's a huge profit on a player that, you know, is uncertain injury wise. Does he fit the Lampard style of football? Are we going to be whipping it in like under Ancelotti and giving this, you know, remarkable header of the ball, this sort of powerhouse when it comes to putting his head on stuff? Are we going to actually develop a team that gets the best out of him next year? Maybe not. So I think he'd be the one that they'd be looking to almost move out before you start for the other two. I think we are going to have to put up with a little bit of heartbreak in the transfer market this summer. Mm. I think we are going to have to say goodbye to a couple of players that we, maybe one or two players that we've really, really grown to sort of love, you know. And I for one, you know, Jordan Pickford is just, the guy is everything that you want from a goalkeeper to a degree. And the way he's matured over the last 2 years has shocked the hell out of me. I didn't think he had it in him. I really didn't. I didn't think he had the ability to just banish all that stuff, you know, and his distribution in the last few weeks has been exceptional. His shot stopping is incredible. His command of the box has got better. You know, his general ability to marshal the back fours seems to have really you know, come on in leaps and bounds. It looks a bit chaotic sometimes, yeah. But you can tell from his point of view what he's trying to say to them and what he's trying to get them to do. And unfortunately, a lot of the time, the people in front of him aren't good yeah. enough.
Yeah.
And I don't, as you say, I don't think you can count more than four or five times this season where he's let us down. And goalkeepers win games, and he's won more than enough for us this season. Without him, we're gone. We were gone weeks ago without him. We'd have been gone weeks ago.
Yeah, him and Richarlison dragged us through this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty much, if you can pick the two players. But Calvert-Lewin did give us a glimpse against Arsenal of what we've been missing this season. Because against Palace. He was exceptional all game against Palace. And he did give us a glimpse of, like, if we'd have had that for any stretch during the season, we possibly wouldn't be in this position. I wouldn't like to lose any of them, but we're going to lose one, maybe two of them.
Yeah.
I think Calvert-Lewin's probably the one, although it would be a bit gutting because he is a class player. I think he's the one who would hurt the least.
Yeah, I mean, financially, I think that needs to happen anyway. You know, the vibe you get from the club is that the only way we're going to get to spend money is by selling players. You know, and let's face it, like you both spoke about before, we talked about those sort of top three that are in the trio that we mentioned there that have done so well for us, certainly in recent years, but certainly Pickford and Richarlison. There's a whole list of others we'd happily lose and get a few quid for if that's the way we need to balance the books. We'll get more into this, lads, when we start talking about this throughout the summer. As you know, with the Blue Room, we're here all the way through the year round, so there's bagfuls of things coming along. Obviously, Dan and Les will be heavily involved in as well, talking this kind of things. Thankfully, it does feel like you can actually go and get some rest from the hangover of a season it's been, gents. And it's been a pleasure speaking to you both about what actually come to pass, which is that Everton is still, thankfully, a Premier League football club. Just really, don't ever let it happen again, lads. Please, we beg of you. I mean, I looked 34 when the season started. I think I could get my pension now if anyone else had a look at me. It's not good for anyone's health the way Everton have treated us this season anyway. But Les, thanks so much as always, mate, for coming on.
You there, Dave?
I thought you were going to professionally say, "Yeah, thanks, Dave." Ta-ra, mate.
I thought you were just doing the full sign off. Then I'll check out.
I'll do the full sign off then, since you're so antisocial. Dan, you'll say a nice goodbye, won't you, mate?
Thank you very much, mate. Lovely. I always love.
Now your sound. Just go and say it again.
I was going to say, it's always a pleasure coming on. It's an absolute honour.
Oh, brilliant, mate. Absolutely. Love having you on as well. So plenty of stuff to talk about across the summer, no doubt. And Everton actually going back to the States as well, which I think some of us are going to try and get over to and see what's happening over there. Because the last time I think we went over to the States, not last year, but the actual season when Martinez took over was when we actually had a decent season after that. So hopefully that's a bit of a good omen. Anyway, thanks so much for listening to us today. We'll be back into the show tomorrow with Matt Jones across the week doing the usual thing that you know we're good at. And thanks for subscribing to us. We'll speak to you again soon. Up the toffees.
O'Reilly. Change your vehicle's oil before your summer road trip and save money now with Pennzoil and O'Reilly Auto Parts. Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic for just $22.95 after mail-in rebate. Save money and protect your engine against sludge and wear with a synthetic oil change. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today or O'ReillyAuto.com.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Sports Social Podcast Network.